Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports.
On the 30th anniversary, we look back at the single worst day in Wall Street history, equivalent to a 5,000-point drop in today's Dow. And it was not during the Depression and not during the 2008 financial crash, but it led to the road to future destruction on Wall Street. That's all tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Diana Enriquez is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff and the Death of Trust, which was made into an HBO film starring Robert De Niro, a financial writer for the New York Times since 1989. She is a George Polk Award winner, Pulitzer Prize finalist, graduate of George Washington University, which I always mention because my daughter went there. And she was a guest on our show for that great Madoff book. And the new one is A First Class Catastrophe, The Road to Black Monday, The Worst Day in Wall Street History. Welcome back, Diana. Great to hear you.
Oh, Jim, it's great to be with you again.
So tell us first your Hollywood experience. You were actually drafted to be in the movie on your book with Mr. De Niro.
I was. It was my Cinderella moment. I kept thinking that the car taking me home was going to turn back into a pumpkin. I was a consultant to the HBO project, so I had been talking with De Niro about my experiences with Madoff, whom, as you know, Jim, from our earlier conversations, I had covered, you know, decades before he got arrested. He didn't burst on my radar just in December of 2008. So, you know, De Niro and I hit it off, and he apparently suggested to director Barry Levinson that I audition to be the reporter who interviews Madoff in prison, since I was the reporter who interviewed Madoff in prison. And I took a screen test to see if I could play myself, which was a kind of surreal experience. Passed the screen test and just had the most remarkable experience of being able to watch up close as one of the era's greatest actors built this personality. And if you've seen the HBO movie Wizard of Lies, you will see one of De Niro's greatest performances. He is, and I can tell you because I know both De Niro and Bernie Madoff, he just occupies Madoff's brain completely. It is surreal how great that performance is. So I had a wonderful time.
And where do you keep your Oscar at home?
There was no category for best performance by a newspaper reporter playing herself.
That will be one of the great lines. I passed the screen test playing myself.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, what if I hadn't? You know,
I was going to say that would have been a
directly to the shrink, right?
All righty. Let's start off because we're now going back in history, and you know, in the U.S., history is like breakfast. What was the overview on Black Monday? It was Monday, October 19th, 1987.
Market had been, as you'll remember, Jim, had been unsteady for months and absolutely bleak for 2 weeks. So going into Black Monday, what's interesting in reconstructing it is, you know, a lot of people, a lot of Main Street people thought that this correction for this incredible bull market that had begun in August of 1982 was over. You know, the first week in October was the worst week since 1929 until the second week in October, which was the worst week since 1929. And, you know, people who were not plugged in to the new way Wall Street was working thought we were done. You know, we'd had a substantial 40% climb in the course of 1987, and it had fallen sharply. And you know, folks said, well, okay, we've had a normal market correction. But as John Phelan, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, had warned Congress repeatedly, the new toys, the new players on Wall Street had the capacity to turn a normal market downturn, a normal correction, into a first-class catastrophe. That was a quote from his testimony. And that's what happened on Monday, October 19th. The market just went into free fall, more selling than it could possibly absorb. And the next day, it almost broke down completely. So while many crashes in our history are important for what came after, of course, the 1929 crash as the portal into the Great Depression and the 2008 crisis as the portal into the worst hard time since the Great Depression. The 1987 crash to me was important because not of what was going to happen next, but because of what it showed us about what had already happened, the ways Wall Street had already changed. And it was those changes that set us on the path to 2008 and indeed on the path that we're still on now.
We have the long-term capital market crash that was really leverage-based and showed the linkage amongst firms, right? We have the Internet crash in 01 that drove the NASDAQ down 4,000 points over time. And then we had, of course, the September 15th Lehman. You don't see those in the same vein that you look at this? I mean, how do you put that all together?
Well, to me, what links them all together, if you look at it, Jim, were those the four big components of the new world that Black Monday revealed to us. And one of them was the advent of the titan-sized investor. You know, giant institutions, giant pension funds and endowments had never been regular players in the stock market. You know, they stayed in safer securities, you know, mortgages, bonds.
Yeah.
It was in the late 70s when the interest rates went crazy that big, giant institutions began to invade the stock market. They've never left. BlackRock and Vanguard together, two firms today, have under management $10 trillion in assets. So investors on that scale had never been a factor in stock market movements prior to the 1980s. So that's one big change that we're still coping with. It was a factor in the long-term capital management crisis in 1998. It was obviously a factor in the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008. Mm-hmm. Derivatives,
yeah.
Financial derivatives that have untested, unexpected consequences were first introduced into the markets in 1982 with the S&P 500 futures contracts in Chicago. And they have multiplied like viruses all over the financial landscape. And they remain, whether they're regulated or unregulated, they remain the bolt from the blue factor in so many of our crises. It was foreign currency derivatives in 1998. It was credit default swaps in 2008. But still, financially engineered derivatives. And in both cases, you had the speed of automation, giving everyone less time to cope and react. And that certainly is the case today, as we learned with the flash crash in 2010 when the market fell, you know, 1,000 points between you know, 2 o'clock and 2:20. So the speed of automation is just it's a one-way street. And then the fourth and final point is the fragmented nature of our regulatory system, which was identified after 1987 as a danger and a risk. It was identified after 2008 as a danger and a risk. And the Trump administration's Treasury Department put out a report in October saying our fragmented regulatory system is a danger and a challenge. So if you look at the crises we experienced before 1987, they all pretty much resemble each other, going back to the Amsterdam tulip bulbs. If you look at the crises we've had after 87, they all resemble 87.
In fact, that pitch you just gave on those four reasons, you could have done that right the day after 2008.
Absolutely.
The exact
Absolutely.
Same. So exactly. That's 30 years of American financial intelligence
30 years of American financial amnesia.
Amnesia, yes. Tell folks a little bit about this was the emergence of the futures markets, the option markets in Chicago, and the exchanges in New York, the equity exchanges. And there's turf issues, there's the way they do business difference, and they were competitive. And, of course, they then link things up to everybody ran to the exits all the time. Talk a little bit about what that is. Explain it.
Well, the financial engineering that had, I must hasten to say, many advantages for modern investors, nevertheless had some unexpected consequences, unforeseen consequences. One of those was the way giant investors could use financial derivatives, like futures contracts, like options contracts, to arbitrage investment opportunities between markets. You know, we all understand arbitrage. If you can, you know, buy gold in London and at $100 an ounce and sell it in New York for $110 an ounce, you can make money if you can do it at the same time and cover your transit costs. Same thing with stocks and stock futures. If you can buy shares on the New York Stock Exchange for less than that futures contract in Chicago, then you can profit from the arbitrage. And it took just a few months after the creation of these new derivatives in 1982 and 83 for institutional investors to figure out strategies, hedging strategies and speculative strategies that linked all these markets together. So regulators were still thinking that, you know, options trade in this little silo, derivatives trade in this silo, or futures contracts, and stocks trade over here, when in fact, the players in those markets were all the same people using strategies that linked all those markets together.
Perfect description. We'll get more into the path to the crash Black Monday next.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092, 800-223-0092, 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with New York Times financial writer Diana Enriquez. We're going to go through some of the events that led to Black Monday. But first, I want to give her a little bit more chance. Tell people, you just did a great job how things all came together and they learned to exploit price differentials in each of those markets while the government was sort of AWOL or didn't understand that or still hasn't understood that, how to regulate that. Well, tell people what program trading is, portfolio insurance, some of the things that ended up being triggers.
Right. Well, these were the shiny new toys of the 1980s market. I mean, you know, the advent of computers on Wall Street made it possible for giant investors through their Wall Street firms to deliver massive orders into the marketplace almost instantaneously, faster than humans could really cope. Now, program trading originally began actually as a human scale process. If a big mutual fund or a pension fund wanted to buy a list of stocks all at the same time because they were suddenly bullish, say, on natural resources, they would contact their broker, and the broker would call the New York Stock Exchange and order, you know, a list of, you know, X many shares of all of these stocks. And the clerks would fan out like a covey of quail to all the different specialist posts on the trading floor and place those orders. And traders could see that happening, physically see it happening. And they knew that that meant that there was a big buy order or a big sell order moving into the marketplace. Computers made that physical, human-scale process automated. It could no longer be seen and anticipated. So that process that was originally called program trading morphed into computerized program trading, where orders could be delivered automatically for large numbers of stocks into the marketplace via computers. Now, program trading was used in a lot of different ways, and I'm afraid that the business media of the era was pretty confused about it. We didn't do a very good job in explaining it to people at the time, but it could be used, for example, for that kind of arbitrage I was talking about earlier. In order to do that, you'd want to get the orders into the market as simultaneously as possible, and computers let you do that. It could be used for a variety of hedging strategies. If you, for example, needed to sell all your stocks and with a South African divestment strategy, you could do that using program trading. Or you could hedge, and one of the most popular hedging strategies of the 80s was something called portfolio insurance. And it was really just like a put. Your sophisticated listeners will know that, you know, a put is an arrangement that allows you to sell something at some point in the future at a price you fix on today. And the people using portfolio insurance were using largely the futures markets to sell their investments in a declining market so that they would reduce their exposure to the stock market as prices were falling. Well, it, you know, looking back with 2020 hindsight, you can see the fall in that argument. You're going to be trying to sell into a downdraft, but the people who used portfolio insurance were convinced that because they were just hedging, no one would be frightened by their sell orders. They would say, look, we don't know anything about where the market's going. We're just selling because it's already gone down.
And then it exacerbated the moves up and down, right? I mean,
of course it did. Why would they think otherwise? But because one of the things that was happening while portfolio insurance was going viral among the institutional investment community was index funds were becoming more and more popular. And so as that happened, the big institutions began to behave more and more alike. You have the advent of the herd institutional investor. And, you know, that's the world we're living in today with, you know, giant index funds all likely to be doing the same thing with the same stocks at the same time.
Scary.
And you know, it's everybody running over to the same side of the boat at once.
It's, as you say, I think everybody's running for the exit at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, if you look at this, portfolio insurance morphed into things like credit default swaps, which brought down 2008, and all the computerized tradings morphed into dark pools, which has hidden it.
Absolutely.
So you get all this stuff that just sort of goes right from 30 years.
You know, when I interviewed Jerry Corrigan, who was the president of the New York Fed, during the crisis, and one of its unheralded heroes, really. When I interviewed him in 2015 for this book, he said to me, sat down at the conference table at Goldman Sachs, and he said, you can draw a direct line from 1987 to 2008.
And he was a hero in both those, right?
He was.
Yeah.
We were fortunate in 87 with the leadership that stepped forward to see us through that crisis. 87 really showed us, Jim, how much of coping with a crisis is psychological and emotional.
Yes.
Not mechanical, not regulatory. It requires an infusion of confidence. There's no rule book for how to deal with the next crisis, but I think this book, I'm not shy about saying, this book gives you an idea of what it takes to get us through. The luck, the pluck, the improvisation, the willingness to try something, abandon it if it doesn't work, and try something else. That's what got us through 1987.
Yeah.
It was a far more near-run thing than we remember. Most people think of 87 as just, you know, the crash without consequences. In fact, it was far more dire than we even knew at the time. The severity of the crisis was something that even I, as a business reporter at the time, was not aware of until I started digging into the background of the crash for this book.
Yeah, in fact, I would talk about it at the end, but it sort of puts a wrap around why Dodd-Frank won't necessarily work based on the improvisation you just said.
Yes,
now, there's another big aspect to this time that ties right through here, which is too big to fail. Talk a little bit about the Continental Bank deal.
Yeah, well, you know, that was an interesting thread in this story. Continental Bank was one of those accidental heroes on Black Monday in two ways. It owned, as a subsidiary, one of the primary options clearing firms in Chicago. And that firm was hit with an old-fashioned panic run.
Yeah.
Customers started pulling cash out of that firm in the middle of Black Monday. And Continental Illinois Bank was able to loan cash to that unit and keep it from collapsing, and therefore save the options market, basically, in the middle of that crisis. Similarly, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the leading futures market, where these S&P 500 futures that were so critical to all of these intermarket strategies were trading, was $400 million short of the cash it needed to open the day after Black Monday. And who came through with a last-minute loan over the phone, not even on a handshake, Continental Illinois Bank. So it became crucial to look back at Continental's history. And in 1984, Continental had almost failed. It became the victim of one of these electronic worldwide panics, a bank run. And the FDIC and the Federal Reserve joined forces to save Continental Illinois in 1984. The political environment in which that happened, a Republican administration, making these decisions and explaining why they made those decisions, I thought was so informative to our current conversation about too big to fail.
And, you know, what it hit me is they had all these purchase loans, almost hot money, that didn't have proper collateral. And then it was, you know, they sold it, Penn Square up to Continental, meaning, again, that nobody was managing risk. It was just being offloaded. We're going to get into the actual day next segment.
Sometimes business owners and entrepreneurs don't follow a traditional schedule. Well, that's where BizTV's Biz Club can work for you on your time. For only $5.95 a month, you can have over 200 hours of our fresh, original content on demand, anywhere, anytime. And with our search feature, you can quickly and easily find the topic or show you're looking for in seconds. Sign up today and see what you've been missing. Free for 7 days. Join the Biz Club. It's BizTV. On your time.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
A message from DAV to returning veterans. Thank you. For doing your duty and doing our bidding. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way and putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for defending our freedom and displaying your honor. DAV thanks all veterans by fighting to get them the benefits and support they were promised. Visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650. Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process?
It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Diana Enriquez, the author of The First Class Catastrophe, actually a first class catastrophe, The Road to Black Monday, the worst day in Wall Street history. And on that day, again, the market went down 22%, worst day ever. And we're going to go through it in some of the components now, but can you convey exactly what it felt like on the ground and in the C-suite with the executives and in the halls of D.C.?
Well, it was... We have to remember that Black Monday was the Monday after a day that, if we hadn't had Black Monday, would have gone down in history as Black Friday. Friday, October 16th, was the first time the Dow had ever closed down more than 100 points. It closed down 108 points. And from 2 o'clock on, people I interviewed from trading desks remembered that it was essentially in free fall through that Friday afternoon. And they knew what was happening. The people who were using portfolio insurance and other hedging strategies were selling like crazy because the market had fallen so much in the two previous weeks. They knew by a rough calculation how much portfolio insurers would need to sell, and they knew that they had not come close to selling the amount they needed to sell on that Friday afternoon. So the professionals went home knowing that there was this pent-up flood of sell orders that were going to hit the markets the minute they opened on Black Monday. Now, that was different from the guy on the street. He thought that Black Friday was the end of it, that was the worst week ever, it was the worst day ever, that we were through the worst of it. But the people on the inside knew differently. They knew that they had to be braced on Monday morning for the worst ever. The market had fallen 108 points on Friday. John Phelan, the chairman of the NYSE, went into work that morning expecting the market to fall 200 points that day. Wow. It would be a 9% drop, second to nothing since 1929. He was braced. His traders were braced. That 9% drop had occurred by midday. The market had fallen 200 points before anyone could even get their breath. And the dance between New York and Chicago, this awful, vicious cycle that was forming where futures values for the S&P 500 would plummet, and that would push the stock price values down on the NYSE. The back and forth between Chicago and New York was accelerating. The volume of trading was breathtaking. By the end of the day, 604 million shares, which was a 50% increase in their highest day ever. So they were struggling to cope. Computers were falling behind. The public ticker was falling behind. The sell orders were overwhelming any buy interest at all. Now, there were some buyers that I interviewed for the book, a stalwart pension fund manager at the State Pension Fund in New Jersey. When he realized what was happening that afternoon, he had about $200 million in cash he could put to work, and he wanted to buy some of these low-cost blue-chip stocks. He had trouble getting his orders into the market. He was the buyer of last resort, but he had trouble buying because the sell orders were overwhelming everything. By the end of the day, the market was down 508 points, 22.6%. As you said earlier, the equivalent of more than 5,000 points in one afternoon today. And John Phelan and his regulator, David Reuter at the SEC, and the chairman of leading Wall Street firms all huddled to figure out can we open the next day? And Phelan furiously felt that they had to open on Tuesday. Similarly, in Chicago, the futures pits were devastated. They'd never seen anything like the declines. The New York market was down 22.6%. The S&P 500 futures market was down 27% in Chicago. So the next morning, they weren't sure they would be able to open, but everyone was determined to try to keep these financial markets running. By midday in New York, it was breaking down. There were not enough buy orders to even open trading in many of the big blue chip stocks. And to the extent that our financial markets almost broke, it was at that midday moment on Tuesday that they almost broke.
And you think it was close to a collapse?
I do.
And you think it was worse than 08's closeness to collapse?
Without a doubt.
Wow.
Because of the speed with which it was happening.
Wow.
And the lack of any awareness of what to do.
Wow.
You know, the fragmented nature of our regulatory system, to some extent, was short-circuited in 2008 because Ben Bernanke and Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, Bernanke, the Fed chief, kind of stepped outside the borders of their traditional authority and worked together to rescue AIG, an insurance giant, which neither one of them regulates.
Yes.
So, you know, they were willing to color outside the lines at high speed to save the system. But in 87, no one was even sure where the system was breaking down.
Was Volcker a hero here?
Volcker was out of office. Alan Greenspan
had
been in office for 10 weeks.
Oh,
David
yes.
Reuter at the SEC had been in office for 10 weeks. So this was fire drill for newbies. Some of them didn't even know each other's phone numbers as they were trying to cope on Black Monday. We got through it, but I think it's important for people to read this account and see what a near-run thing it was, how much just, you know, old-fashioned handshake relationships, trust and gentle arm twisting and diplomacy was a factor.
How do you feel the SEC and the CFTC do? It always amazed me that the Senate Agriculture Committee rules the futures, financial futures, you know, regulatory function.
Well, you know, that made sense back in the early
yes.
70s when the futures markets were primarily serving the agricultural
industry. Pork bellies.
Yes, pork bellies, soybeans, wheat, corn. But beginning in the 70s with foreign currency futures and interest rate futures, the futures markets began to shift more and more into finance. And there was an enormous debate over who should regulate financial futures. And for purely political reasons, the CFTC won. And as a result, the SEC was steering into Black Monday without clear and deep understanding of how the futures markets worked.
Yeah.
Worse than that, the futures markets had created all of these new contracts tied to the stock market that without clearly embedding in them a recognition of how the stock market worked. Just one example. Futures markets were relying on constant fresh prices for stocks out of New York. But as you know, Jim, stocks halt trading in New York all the time. You know, trading is halted to announce some news, or trading is halted because of an order imbalance. And when trading is halted in New York, it has an immediate impact on the staleness of the prices in Chicago. But that had not been built into the way these derivatives had been designed. So we had, you know, a rising ignorance factor between these markets and their regulators, and it was almost devastating on Black Monday.
Let me ask you this as we finish off the last minute and a half. Tell us how the fever was broken on October 20th. And lo and behold, another linkage. One of the key guys is the father of the current Treasury Secretary.
Yes. Yeah. My colleague Floyd Norris at the New York Times, to whom I dedicate this book, by the way, happened to have placed himself at the Solomon Brothers trading desk that week. He was a colleague of mine at Barron's at the time. And so he was able to tip me off to this story, which I was then later able to fully confirm. Around noontime on that Tuesday, when the market was at its worst, near the breaking point, Stanley Shockhorn, who was the head of trading at Salomon Brothers and a legendary figure on the street, called his rival at Goldman Sachs, Robert Mnuchin, Bob Mnuchin, the father of the current Treasury Secretary, and they had a telephone conversation, after which Shockhorn stepped out to his giant trading desk, one of the marvels of the financial world, and said, "We're buying." And they started entering orders for all the big blue chip stocks that had not yet opened on the New York Stock Exchange, started pumping hundreds of millions of dollars in the marketplace. Over at Goldman Sachs, Bob Mnuchin's trading desk was doing exactly the same thing, pumping money into the marketplace at a critical moment. And, you know, whether or not that by itself would have turned the market around is a you know, an arguable point, but it certainly gave heart to the specialists on the New York Stock Exchange that maybe they were going to survive this. There were other things that were happening in the market at that same moment, but certainly that conversation, which I later was able to reconstruct, which was basically, you know, for the good of the system, we've got to get some buy orders into the market. Cooperation between these two trading rivals on Wall Street certainly was part of what got us through that day.
Really put us right on the floor in that segment. We'll look in the final segment. Can the system ever be fixed?
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare.
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airlines. Travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older?
If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow.
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.T. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're talking the 1987 Black Monday crash with Wall Street reporter Diana Enriquez. So, Diana, who's to blame for Black Monday? And as you know, there were a bunch of conspiracy theories out there, too. So give it a shot.
Yeah, well, the conspiracy theories are always reliable to count on. You know, they always emerge. And one of them was that there was, you know, market manipulation in one of the futures contracts still trading in Chicago. I think I pretty well debunk that theory. I tracked down the actual trades that occurred in that highly illiquid contract and explained that that was a highly unlikely conspiracy. There was certainly lack of full disclosure at the New York Stock Exchange about the extent to which blue chip stocks had stopped trading, whether or not that was just a breakdown in communications or some inspired obfuscation or subterfuge at the last minute on Tuesday, October 20th, is up to the reader to decide. But certainly, I saw no sign of a conspiracy either to pull the market down on Monday or to hold it up on Tuesday. What I saw instead was, you know, pluck and some luck and some necessary improvisation through that day that got people to Wednesday. But we forget that wasn't the end of the crisis. You know, at that point, Charles Schwab was facing a ruinous loss from an options trade out of Hong Kong and was trying desperately to keep its doors open. Only regulators knew about that. We didn't. The Chicago Merc had almost failed on Tuesday, and that rumor was getting getting around. So the crisis really continued through the end of November, with, you know, regulators juggling hand grenades every single day. So it was a we forget how desperate it was, and I hope I can bring that back to people's minds, because it's important that people understand how quickly our modern markets can go south without us being really able to respond quickly enough.
So you come down that the innovation and the program trading and the futures markets and all that interplay, all of that is just that's essentially what caused the whole thing.
Yes, I mean, if you're looking for a simple explanation, it's got four components. In a fragmented regulatory system, people rewrote the rules. Giant investors using automated trading strategies and untested derivatives all started behaving in a herd-like way that destabilized the market. Now, by the way, I just precisely described 2008 to So, and I probably have just precisely described our next financial crisis as well. So that's what's so scary about it, is that we've learned so little about this experience.
That's where I want to go to finish up how we fix these things. The Brady Report called for a single market, single regulator, or a single regulator to match the single market. And it was almost dead on arrival initially, and when I had forgotten that Greenspan was in, it really hit me after you said that. He personally had no interest in implementing that regulatory relief suggestion, right? And he was the guy that could have done it.
Absolutely. He is more responsible for the lack of a comprehensive financial regulator on the U.S. market than almost any other individual. He, in his mea culpa testimony after the 2008 crisis, confessed to a belief in rational markets behaving efficiently that was totally belied by Black Monday. No one can emerge through Black Monday and believe that markets are anything other than subject to irrational moments of panic in which you cannot rely on internal forces to control them. You need, some kind of confidence-saving mechanism from the outside. So that was a disappointment to the people who led the Brady Commission. I interviewed former New Jersey Senator Nicholas Brady, who led that landmark commission for President Reagan at great length, and he was profoundly disappointed that so little was done in the aftermath of 87 to address the problems. But, after 2008, John Snow, who had been George W. Bush's Treasury Secretary, and Christopher Cox, the SEC chairman, both testified to Congress again that this balkanized regulatory system that we had was so dangerous, and urged that it be repaired. But again, nothing was done. It's a political problem more than a financial or regulatory.
So you do call for a single regulator if it could be done.
Almost every other well-developed market in the world has a single financial regulator. They have a central bank and a financial regulator. We've got a central bank and an entire village of financial regulators.
That's a good point.
We've got a banking regulator, a securities regulator, and an insurance regulator in every one of the 50 states before we even get to Washington.
Another point you make, which scares me too, is you think Dodd-Frank might actually exacerbate the next crisis.
I am worried about that, because in the diatribes against future bailouts, Congress, in its dubious wisdom, has enacted a rule book for the next crisis, governing who can be bailed out under what circumstances and in what way. Well, I hate to break it to them, but the next financial crisis is not going to give you time to organize an entire meeting of all the Federal Reserve chairmen in the afternoon and make a decision about this. We won't have minutes to respond. The notion that you can plan in advance for who you would rescue in a future crisis is nuts. Nobody in 1986, even in January of 1987, no one would have picked a little options clearing firm in Chicago as a financially, systemically important firm that needed to be rescued in the event of a crisis. It was totally off the radar, and yet, if it had failed, the options market would have failed. And everyone from Alan Greenspan on down was cheering Continental Illinois on as it rescued its subsidiary and kept it from failing. So you can't steer through the next crisis in the rearview mirror. So that's what worries me about the rules that are built in to the Dodd-Frank legislation. I wish Congress would take a serious look at that and consult with the experts at the Federal Reserve, who know a little something about steering through financial crises, and get that amended.
And it sounds like, as we finish up here, that these things are always going to come down to the folks that are in the big seats at the time.
It does. And, if we're lucky, we'll have people of the talent and personal gifts that we had in 87 and in 2008. And if we're not lucky, we won't. And it will be worse.
What a way to end it. Thanks to Diana Enriquez. It's a great book. It's a whodunit. Maybe a voice in the wilderness. And as in the psychology world, there's the duty to warn, which is, if there's a danger coming, that they have a duty to warn folks. And that's kind of what this book is doing. A first-class catastrophe, the road to Black Monday, the worst day in Wall Street history. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Diana. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.